Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today on the podcast, I am doing a guest interview with the very wonderful Raylan Agle. If you don't already know who Raylan Agle is, you definitely want to know who she is because she runs a very successful YouTube channel which posts many, many inspiring recovery interviews as well as just general information, tips, interviews with doctors that may be very supportive in your fatigue recovery journey. Raylan is also an author. So she wrote a book which is called Finding Freedom, Escaping from the Prison of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome. And in my own recovery, I stumbled across Raylan's book and I ended up reading it. And although everybody finds their own journey to recovery differently, I did really find Raylan's book really, really helpful to bring me back to the basics. You've probably heard me talk on the podcast before about how much the basics matter and how it's really important to do the simple things consistently to get the results instead of thinking we need to do fancy or expensive interventions all the time. And I found Raylan's book at a time in my journey when I was trying to do all the fancy tests and spending lots of money on supplements and feeling very frustrated with my progress. And even though Raylan doesn't have any qualifications in nutrition or medicine or anything like that, she just shared her own journey, which was a 10-year long experience recovering from ME and CFS. But the wisdom of somebody who's been through the process was very, very insightful for me at that time and such a fantastic reminder to come back to the basics. Since reading Raylan's book and fulfilling my own recovery journey, one day Raylan reached out to me on Instagram and asked me if I'd like to be on her YouTube channel. So you can also find a few of my interviews on Raylan's YouTube channel as well. But we have collaborated on a few projects together and I just find her an incredible human. She's doing wonderful work for the fatigue recovery community. And if you don't already know about her, I really hope that you will enjoy learning more about her in this interview. I hope that you'll enjoy all the offerings on her YouTube channel. And even if you do know who she is and what she's all about, I just hope that you'll enjoy this conversation today. So no more waffling from me. Let's begin the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today, I am with Raylan Agle, who I am very excited to interview. I have featured on Raylan's YouTube channel many times in the past, and we've collaborated on a few projects in the past. And also, Raylan, I'm not sure if I ever told you this, but I discovered your book in my own chronic fatigue recovery. So it's wonderful to have you here on the show today. And I thought maybe just a really good place to start would be for you to tell everyone a little bit more about you.
Sure. And thank you for having me, Anna. I just adore you and everything that you do. I think you are such a gift to this community and I'm honored to be here. So thank you. Thank you for including me.
Well, it's such a pleasure to have you. I know we had, you know, you were very busy when I first reached out. So I know time and energy is always precious and I appreciate you giving both to me, but also to the listeners as well. I'm sure they're really going to enjoy this.
Yeah, it's one of those lessons that I'm still trying to learn from my own journey with chronic fatigue syndrome or ME/CFS. You know, I once I got past it, I vowed I'd never get back into the busy, busy, fast-paced life, but it's challenging. Those old personality traits kind of die hard and things start to build up. So yeah, always stuff to juggle. But yeah, so for people who aren't aware, I had my own about 10-year journey with ME/CFS. I actually grew up with a mother who, when I was about 5 years old, became unwell and was eventually diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. So yeah, she, you know, it took a while for doctors to figure out what it was, but eventually she got the CFS diagnosis and she remained unwell with it for the remainder of her life. And then when I was about 30 years old, I got a really bad flu that just didn't seem to want to go away. And eventually I also was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. So it was like it is for everybody. It was a really rough journey a lot of the time. The first couple of years is when I was my most unwell, and it came on very suddenly, and I very quickly had to take a long-term disability leave from my job. I was doing a part-time master's degree at university, and I had to take a disability leave from that as well. You know, I used to work out 5-6 days a week and just very active socially and traveling and just everything almost overnight. It felt like anyways, just came to a stop. And I went to see my doctor. She did the test, told me I was fine, sent me on my way. And I, like most people, just kind of left to figure it out for myself. To a point, I found a really good integrative medicine doctor who at least believed me and wanted to work with me. So I spent a lot of money with him over the next couple of years trying to get better. And I did improve a bit, but I was still really unwell. So I ended up being sort of not coasting, but just I felt like I tried everything there was to try. Nothing was really getting me very far. So I was just kind of in survival mode, I think, for a few years, just trying to keep my head above water. And then I just got to a point where I realized I couldn't live the rest of my life with every single day feeling like a struggle. There wasn't one easy day in all of those years. So I knew I had to get serious about recovery again. And so I went all in, and it ended up taking me, I don't know, 1 to 2 years start to finish once I got serious again, but I did fully get past it. And it's been probably 5 years now that I've been good and healthy, and it has not come back. So yeah, happy to be here.
I guess there's two kind of main things I'm thinking about in terms of this episode. There's like your story, which I'd love to dive into a little bit in more detail first. And then there's also like everything that's come from your story and how you're now contributing to the community, because I really want people to listen to this episode and then find your YouTube channel or read your book and engage with your Facebook group and all the different things that you have to offer so that it can support them further in their own journey. But if we stay on your personal journey to start with, I mean, 10 years is a really long time. And I assume in 10 years, you probably tried so many different things. And you said you, and I kind of know the answers because I have read your book, but you know, in the beginning, you were doing certain things and it kind of made a difference, but not really. Then you sort of took a break and tried to push through. But then you said you eventually decided you were ready to kind of really go for it. And at that point in time, when you decided to make that commitment to yourself, what did you do? And what were the things that you found most helpful?
Yeah, it's interesting because my understanding then of what was helping me recover versus my understanding now is quite different. I'd seen little things over the years that had shown some promise, but when you're just pushing through and trying to keep your head above water, it's really hard to go all in on seriously trying some of these things. Cause you know what it's like. You know, I was in a lot of that sort of push and crash cycle and just overdoing it and just never consistently in a space where I felt stable enough to get serious about these things. So basically it was, I firmly believed in my body's own ability to heal itself or get past this on its own. So I was doing everything I could to support my body's own amazing things that it already knew how to do. So I started doing all sorts of things, like I got really serious about sleep, which I know is easier said than done, but I just sleep at all costs was my motto. So just everything, whatever I had to do, even if it was taking prescription medication, like it's just like, I will make any change necessary so that I sleep. Things like supporting my lymphatic system, you know, taking cold showers, getting exposure to sunlight, being outside, especially in the morning if I could, working on my stress, you know, journaling, counseling, meditating, all of that. I completely changed my diet. I actually went to a whole food plant-based diet and I recovered while on that diet. And I saw a lot of health benefits in my body when I changed to that diet, although I now no longer think it was so connected to my ME/CFS recovery. I think it helped with some other things. And I no longer am on that, eat that same way. But at the time, I felt like it was a part of my journey. The biggest piece, though, or one of the biggest pieces, it just with the diet. Also, I worked on things like my gut health and started eating fermented foods. And I think that made a world of difference, too. Again, now looking back, I don't know. The one that I think pulled its weight the most is I started what I call an exercise program, but that is not the right term because it was not exercise, at least not off the start. Because like most people, I get really significant post-exertional malaise when I tried any kind of activity. So, but I read a book, the only book, the only person I'd ever heard of who had recovered. It was Toby Morrison in Australia. And I think that book is no longer even in circulation, but he did a sort of, I know this is controversial, but like a, you know, like a gradual graduated exercise program. And it worked for him, or at least that was part of it. And also I had seen when I did small amounts of physical activity that I enjoyed, very small amounts, I could slowly start to do more and more. So I started with just 1 minute a day of just movement, like maybe arm circles or push-ups off the wall, like just something really gentle. And I'd try and do that most days of the week. And then the next week, if I felt up to it, I'd increase it by a minute. And every week I kept doing that as much as I could. And it by far was delivering the most results. Every time I'd up it by a minute, I'd feel my body push back. I'd get some of that post-exertional malaise, but it was manageable. And I was at peace with it. I expected it. I'm like, this is part of the process. I'm going to have to feel a little bit worse sometimes to get a little bit better. But then whereas 2 minutes of movement would make me feel unwell, the next week I could do 2 minutes and I was fine. And now it was 3 minutes that would make me feel unwell. So just by pushing that needle every week, within a year, I was doing hour-long workouts at the gym, pushing as hard as I wanted, strength training, and I was good. And I didn't really understand what was happening at the time, but a lot of us now are seeing that at least in some cases, there is, you know, the autonomic nervous system, our threat assessment systems, you know, our brain is involved in assessing threats, perhaps in a hypersensitive state or inaccurately for whatever reason. So I think it was more of a like a gradual re-exposure therapy or almost like a phobia therapy. It was just training my brain, training my nervous system that exercise was okay. So it wasn't that 1 minute of arm circles that was, you know, quote unquote, curing the CFS. It was just, I for years had been terrified of movement and exercise, and it just instantly triggered symptoms in me. So I now, at the time, I thought of it as more of a physical intervention, but I mean, it is physical, but I was thinking of it more of it in terms of my muscles. And now I think of it more in terms of my nervous system, my brain, and so forth. So yeah, it was a lot of different things, a lot of things that all help my health generally. But I think the biggest ones were working on stress and my mental health state overall, and also this kind of gradually adding in more activity and getting my body used to it.
Yeah. And I was just thinking and listening to you talk about how you did like 1 minute and then the next week you did like an extra minute. It actually takes a huge amount of discipline not to do more than your daily allocated minutes. And I also remember like when I read your book and you had like spreadsheets and like all sorts of like things where you organized, everything was really, really super organized. And I was curious about how you felt about the concept of consistency. Like, you know, you made that decision to like really commit to yourself and do things properly. And you were clearly very organized and very disciplined and very consistent. And how much do you feel that that played a part in the journey?
Yeah, I think I'm lucky, or this approach, if tried with the wrong mindset, I think could completely backfire, because I hear about the spreadsheets and all of that. I'm like, oh boy, that could be stressful all on its own. But I was really excited about it. So the spreadsheets were exciting for me and I was, you know, at peace with it. And I had a lot of flexibility with the process despite the spreadsheets. So if I didn't want to up it the next week, I'm like, no, I'm good at 3 minutes. I'm not going to go to four. I just wouldn't. But I do think that discipline, when combined with self-compassion and flexibility, is really important. Because for me, it was all about just sort of showing up and doing the reps. I, you know, frequently compare it to a person who's going to the gym and trying to get bigger biceps. You know, they just have to keep showing up and doing those bicep curls. And it's okay if you miss one day. It's not going to ruin your whole progress. But you have to show up consistently enough if you want to get where you're trying to go. So I think the discipline piece and being organized is important. And you know, one of the many takeaways from all of this for me was that the things that deliver the biggest results are those really small, seemingly insignificant things done repeatedly over time. And on any given day, it doesn't really seem like they're getting you anywhere. But as long as you're heading the right direction, the right trajectory, I always like to talk about, you know, you're going to get there eventually. So I think it is. It is a lot of that commitment to yourself and that repetition so that you can slowly get where you're trying to go.
Yeah, it's it was a bit of a loaded question because this is what I'm also seeing with the clients that we work with in my practice is that some people are just not spreadsheet people and that can be stressful for some people. But I think if you're not a spreadsheet person, you can find your way to do things. But I think that, that compounded interest over time of doing things really well and doing it with consistency really does make a difference. And often I find I'm like holding the reins back on clients because they want to do more as soon as they see things are progressing. And sometimes I'm almost just like, no, that's just like, just keep repeating what's already working instead of feeling that you have to add more on at any point in time. So it's interesting to hear you reflect that back from your own experience.
Yeah. And I very much, it was the reasons I wasn't successful with this in the past is I always tried to do too much. So I just decided, like, I'm going to start so small that it feels like it can't possibly be helping. Like, I'm just going to start in the ridiculous range and I'm just going to be at peace with that. Because I've tried the other way a zillion times and that doesn't work. And like many of us, you know, before I got CFS, I was sometimes working out 3 or more hours a day. I was just an overdoer of things. If some is good, more must be better. So to do 5 minutes of exercise felt like that was already super toned down. So yeah, it's a completely different way of thinking. And it's a whole different level of self-control.
It's you take that self-discipline you use to go to the gym 3 hours a day, and now you apply it to making sure you only do 3 minutes of exercise. Yeah. It's like a complete reversal, but at least you have that strong self-discipline muscle, which seems to have served you in your journey. In terms of just, you know, this experience, I'm sure you'll agree, it just completely changes you as a person. It's the most horrific thing to go through because your whole life essentially falls apart and you have to rebuild it. And even though I think none of us would probably want to do it all over again, there can be parts of us that feel grateful for the experience and the lessons that we've been able to learn. And I'm curious if there's anything, any way that you've changed that you feel grateful for, any important lessons that you've learned in your journey?
Yeah, it's such a hard thing to wrap your head around. And we hear this from people a lot. So I know this isn't unique just to me, but oh, please don't make me go through that again. If I had to go through that 10 years again, I don't even... Like, it was a nightmare. It was, I mean, there were good times, there were more challenging times, but it was definitely, I know I hit some really, really low spots and it was such a horrible thing to go through. But that being said, I could never take it back. If someone gave me a magic wand and just said, okay, let's just take those 10 years away, you never had to go through that. I couldn't do it because it completely changed me. I was just not on the right path in my life before this hit me. And I don't think that's a coincidence that that's when this hit me. I was in a marriage that ultimately at the time was no longer going well. I was in a career that was in a really bad fit for me. I was a social worker and I was working in a busy hospital, and I just every day was just really tough. And even just a lot of my social circle and just so many things. I didn't even want to be living where I was living, the city I was in, just everything in my life felt off. But I felt stuck and I didn't have the courage or the whatever you need to make those kind of big life changes. So it forced everything to stop. I mean, for one, I just always kept so busy that I never really took time to even reflect too much about these things or address them or admit, be brave enough to tell myself that, okay, maybe this isn't a good fit. Maybe I need to change careers. Maybe I need to get out of this marriage. You know, maybe I need to move to a new city or country. So it forced me to start looking at these things because all of a sudden it was just quiet. All the noise was gone and all I had was time to sort of reflect. So it was sort of like growth boot camp. And so many of the things that I learned as I was working my way through this journey with ME CFS about getting past it, at the time I thought were just tools to help me get past it. But virtually all of them I still use today. And I mean, not only does something like this give you a whole new appreciation for the small things and the big things and life, and I think it helps me to get focused about what I really want and make that a priority and, you know, make sure my life is as much as possible. It's never perfect, but in line with kind of what you want your life to be. Any goals now I'm trying to achieve, whether it be like through career or finances or travel or whatever, all of those things that got me through MECFS are what helped me with this now, thinking about, okay, have patience, stop comparing myself to everybody else. I have my own timeline. I have my own journey. Rapid success is the exception, not the norm. These things take time. Take moments to step back, zoom out, and look how far you've come. Because sometimes, no matter what it is, it can feel like you're getting nowhere. But when you really step back and look at it, you're like, wow, I've learned so much. I've made all this progress. You know, be proud of what I'm doing. And I think a really big one through all of this is the way I used to talk to myself throughout my life was really horrible. That voice in my head was critical and driving and demanding and, you know, pretty mean a lot of the time. So I didn't even realize it. So now I pay attention to how I treat myself and how I talk to myself and really try and catch myself in those moments when I'm being hard on myself and just be a lot kinder. And throughout all of this, no matter what it is I'm working towards, remembering that, you know, progress isn't linear. You're going to have two steps forward, one step back, and just accepting that that's part of the process and that this is just kind of how life goes. So I think it's just really equipped me with a lot of self-care tools. It's with a lot of mindset tools to keep me focused on how I want to be living my life. And then just a lot of general tools that you need when you're working towards anything challenging in your life. It really helps me with all of the things that I'm trying to accomplish. And I know I'll hold on to these things for the rest of my life. So I don't know. I'm sure you could gain all of these tools without going through MECFS, but I think it would take significantly longer. That growth bootcamp is kind of invaluable. I wouldn't wish it on anyone, but the silver lining is that there's so much that we take away from it. And I'm so grateful for the person that I am today, who also has so much more self-compassion for other people and so much empathy for people who are facing struggle.
I heard you also talk on another interview about just being able to like relate to people, like connect with people so much more since going through this kind of transformation, because it is a transformative process, I believe. And I'd say that's something that really resonates with me as well. I just feel like that when you've been through something really, really hard and you have that deep connection with your own pain, it allows you to kind of like be with the pain that others are experiencing as well without being so afraid of it. Especially, you know, we live in this culture, especially British people. I'm not British, but, you know, British people can be very like buttoned up and, you know, quite stiff. And yeah, there's not often a lot of space for like emotion and vulnerability, and people can be quite uncomfortable if you express that. But I feel like going through this experience, like you just become so comfortable with pain, other people's pain and your own pain, because you just had to just sit alongside it for such a long time.
It is incredible. And I'm originally from Canada, but now live in the US. And I find, I don't know how it compares to the UK, but it feels similar here too. And I used to be so afraid to tell these parts about myself to people. I was actually ashamed of it for a really long time. And I know that there's no reason to be, this wasn't my fault, but it felt like it was some sort of character flaw somehow, or like I was weaker than other people. And especially when you have something called chronic fatigue syndrome, it just sounds like, I used to call it crazy lazy syndrome. I'm like, I might as well be telling people I have crazy lazy syndrome. That's what it sounds like to me when I say this out loud. I don't think people get it. So I didn't want to open up about it. But the beautiful thing is now, every single time I tell people even just a glimpse of this, like an honest, you know, piece of myself, you can just see the relief in the other person. And they almost immediately start sharing things about themselves. I think people want to be able to voice some of this. It's a lot to carry, and it is exhausting to keep up this facade every day, like everything is fine and like you've never been through anything hard in your life when that's not the case. So I found it's just given me, it's normalized for me and shown me that it always pretty much turns out well if I can say something honest and true about my life, because the people around me are just so happy and so relieved. And then they get to kind of unburden themselves from something that they've carried, or maybe a relative or a friend. So yeah, I think as humans, we want and need this. And this has just shown me that it's okay to talk about it, and it not just okay, just everyone's better off for it. So yeah. And then you bust through the small talk and the superficialness of interactions that can happen with people, and much more quickly can build really meaningful relationships, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. I think it's about facilitating that connection, which as human beings is like so important. Tell us a little bit about how your life looks now. And, you know, since your whole journey, you've come out the other side of this. What are all the things that you now enjoy now that you have more of your health back?
Oh, this is such a fun question for me. Thank you for that. Because I just think back to myself, especially when I was really in those low places and feeling hopeless and like things were never going to change and that life was going to be hard and all of these dreams I had for myself were gone. And the crazy thing is that I wasn't even dreaming big enough. Like before I got ME/CFS, what I was hoping for my future was not super ambitious. It was not a lot, but it's so incredible now. Yeah. I've had such a desire to travel and see the world. And I started even before I was fully recovered going around to different countries. It was hard and I had to take a lot of naps and a lot of rest days. But, you know, I've now lived and worked in 5 different countries. I am now living in California with my husband, which is just incredible. I'm working out again, but not 3 hours a day, like 30 minutes a day, like a normal person workout. And I travel again, and I paint, and I scuba dive, and I skydive, and I got a motorcycle in the last year. And I just started snowboarding before I got sick. I was terrible, but that got taken off the table. So just last year, I started snowboarding again, and my husband and I go all the time. I'm working full time. I've got all of these sort of side projects, I guess, around supporting people with ME/CFS, which just brings so much purpose to my life that I'm so passionate about. So yeah, I mean, there's still challenges. It's not a happily ever after. I'm of course just sharing all the highlights. There's still hard times and, you know, things aren't always rosy, but it's great. And if someone had told sick and miserable me all that was still to come all those years ago, my head would have exploded. I never would have believed you. So it's amazing. Just really thinking of this time with chronic illness really can just be one chapter of your life. Maybe it's a 10-year chapter. I hope not for other people, but there are so many chapters still to come. So it's been really great getting to have that freedom to do different things, try different things, and live my life more fully again.
On that note, talking about some of the things that you do, some of these side projects, you know, I found your book. I think it was one Christmas I had subscribed to the Kindle Unlimited, and I think maybe it was included in you know, whatever you could get on Kindle Unlimited. And I just got this book and I started reading it. And then there were actually some, you know, as you say, like sometimes the things, and I talk about this a lot on the podcast, actually, it's just because we have this like complex unknown illness, sometimes we think we need to do like really complicated things to feel better. But I always say, like, the first thing you want to do is just get those basics in place, things that you've already mentioned, like your sleep, your gut health, your stress management, looking at your diet if that's something that you need to do, like the movement routine that you found so helpful. When I found your book, I had already been like trying to do all the complicated things. And it was really like a nice anchor just to come back to some of the basics again. And then, you know, I read the book and my journey continued. And then one day I just got a message on Instagram, I believe, from you. And you were like, do you want to come on my YouTube channel? And I was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. So tell us a little bit about all the ways you serve the community, because you really do so much. And people who don't already know about you need to know.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Anna. Yeah, I started with my book. I felt I had a story to tell. When I came through this. I'm like, oh my goodness, my mother never recovered. All I ever hear is that no one ever recovered. I'm like, I actually got past this. This is incredible. So I just wanted to get my story out. And I will admit I had a bit of a naive notion that I had stumbled on some sort of formula that would probably work for other people. Thinking that, not that there are the one size fits all program, but not that there was one. So I wrote my book. I had two goals with it. The first half of it reads like a memoir. So it's just sharing my story. And although I cover the heaviness of it, I also try and make it light and funny and uplifting. And people just tell me, it's like, oh, it's like you're telling my story, that it's just validating to hear and read about someone going through
it. I felt that way when I read it. Yeah, there were so many parallels, I think, in our personality types as well.
So many people tell me that it's like I wrote it. And I feel the same when I read things from other people. And then the second half walks through everything that I did to recover. Like I said, this was a few years ago, and I understand my recovery different now. And were all of those things necessary to get well? Some of them just generally healthy living things, and I think were really good. And when people tell me, they're like, oh yeah, you know, I like a buffet, a couple of those things made sense for me. Not all of it resonated, which is going to be the case for most of us when we hear about recovery. And then from there, I thought, you know, I need to do more. How can I get the word out that recovery is possible? So then I just started some of the usual things. I started an Instagram account and started sharing there. That was my safe space. Well, this was all very terrifying for me, by the way. I'm someone who tried to hide this from the world for years. I didn't even tell most of my friends. To now just publicly speaking about it, it was a very anxiety-provoking thing. But I'd say the biggest thing that I've done that has been the most impactful, at least for me, and has grown, and I've been able to get as many stories out as my YouTube channel. And at first I started it just sharing my own story. I wanted to get that information out there. And then I quickly realized that wasn't enough. So I wanted to interview other people that had recovered. And I figured there were maybe 5 other people in the world who were willing to tell their story, and I was going to find them. You being one of them. Yeah. So I started there, and then I quickly realized, I mean, once the channel started growing, that there are so many people recovering, and this myth that we're all being fed that people don't get better isn't true, at least for a lot of people. So yeah, now I've shared, I believe, 160 or more recovery interviews and counting. I do more every week. And I also just share I still do a lot of reading and research. So I do some videos on my own, just sharing the latest things I come across. And I interview doctors and experts, scientists, researchers, you know, program creators, coaches, just anyone who has any, you know, expertise on this topic that can share what can help people recover. And yeah, from there, just for people, I mean, virtually everything I put out is available online for free in various formats, but for people that are just really want, it can be a lot to sift through. So for people who want, you know, more structured stuff, I have some online courses that people can take. I have a weekly newsletter I put out that summarizes the recovery interviews for the people that just can't keep up with all those videos. So hopefully there's a little bit of something for everyone, depending on, you know, what your preferred platform is, if you prefer to watch or listen or read or do a course. There's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, and we'll include links to all of your resources in the show notes for the episode. Something I feel very curious about is, because you've said a few times you understand your recovery differently now, and I was wondering how much listening to other people's stories helped you to see parts of yourself or things in a different way that you hadn't seen them before. Like, how much have you learned in hindsight from doing 160 interviews? Because I'm sure there's a lot that must be covered in those interviews.
I'd say 90% of what I learned came from that. And the other 10% is books and resources that those people pointed me in the direction to read and to listen to. It's every single interview I do, I learn something new. It's really incredible. People, I think it's the best resource we have for recovery is the recovery interviews, because it is nuanced and everyone's journey isn't exactly the same. And each person, and even if someone's talking about something that someone else has already covered, they might explain it in a way that clicks for you. And you're like, oh, I get that now. So yeah, invaluable. So incredible.
And I've heard you talk about this on another podcast, so I do kind of know the answer, but have there been any trends that you've noticed over the years, particular things that most people have found helpful or not helpful? What are the patterns or themes that you've noticed?
Yeah, well, starting with the things that aren't helpful, being overly strict and rigid with yourself, if you're that type A overachiever, if that person is still in charge of your recovery, it doesn't seem to go well if you're being a drill sergeant about it. So just generally that mindset and having that self-compassion seems really important. I mean, I wish I could do clips just from all of the interviews that I've done, because I think you'd have, of 160, you'd probably have 158 of them say, I spent a ton of money on supplements. They didn't help. I'm not saying that there are no supplements that help anybody. You know, if you're listening, there are things that help you. That is fantastic. It's just, as an overall theme, I think spending a fortune on supplements and taking a ton doesn't seem to be one of the more impactful methods.
And even with my career and understanding of supplements, I still did that. I think that's what helps me be more compassionate and less heavy-handed with supplements with my clients, is because I do believe some things can really be helpful, but I also made the mistake of just also spending loads of money on things that I didn't need to spend money on.
And that's another one. Recovery doesn't have to be expensive. There are expensive programs that can help people, but virtually everyone I've interviewed, a lot of them did spend a fortune trying to recover, but it wasn't those things that got them there in the end. Throwing a lot of money at it doesn't seem to be necessary either. You know, themes for things that did work for people are a lot of the small things. I used to get really uncomfortable when I started doing the interviews, because I know that there are people watching who are severely unwell, some of them bedbound, you know, just really in a bad place. And then I'd be interviewing these people that would be talking about how meditation and, you know, getting out of a career they didn't like, or breath work or sunshine. And I'm like, oh my goodness, people are going to be so angry at me, like, because this isn't the answer that people are looking for. Like, this is a very serious physical condition, and it's going to need a serious physical complex intervention to fix this. But interview after interview after interview, it's the really small, simple things that we overlook and take for granted around our mental health, our stress levels, our sun, our sleep, simple things with diet that really go a long way. However, the biggest one, something I didn't even talk about in my book because I didn't even understand it at the time, but just that theme of the autonomic nervous system, the limbic system, the brain. A lot of people that do brain retraining programs find that incorporating something that addresses the autonomic nervous system and the brain in their recovery really helps them to get where they're trying to go. Not everybody, you know, we have millions and millions of people around the world facing these conditions. So it seems unlikely that it's exactly the same for everybody, but that definitely has been a dominant theme. So this is either looking at past trauma that people are carrying around, and this can be small T trauma. It doesn't have to be what we traditionally think of as trauma, but things that we've been carrying. What impact is that having on our nervous system? And it's trying to keep us safe and protect us from things, and just incorporating a lot of messages of safety and interrupting those automatic pathways that have been created in the brain, where, you know, it's a whole complex topic on its own, but we talk about this a lot now, but just understanding how symptoms are created and how symptoms are stopped, and that they are warning signals that our body is trying to keep us safe. But sometimes these warning signals are sent in error, in the absence of any threat. So it can feel like, I mean, the symptoms are very real and you're very much suffering, but the people who look at that component and work with their sympathetic nervous system, parasympathetic nervous system, trying to keep themselves in that calmer state, and retrain their brain to not be assessing things as threats that are fine, really go a long way. I mean, that one smacks me in the face. I don't know how many times a month I just am told it over and over and over in different ways. So there's no denying that that is a major component, for at least a subset of people facing these conditions, for sure.
And I'm curious, because you recovered before you knew all about this, but are there things that you can see in your journey that you were doing that, even though you didn't know you were doing, were supporting that mechanism?
Absolutely. If we want to call it a radiated exercise program, which in essence, that's what it was so gentle. That was actually a brain retraining program. I see now. I somehow figured out that I needed to do that, even though I didn't understand what I was doing at the time. And everything I was doing to be at peace with the symptoms and not freak out every time they came. That again was working with my nervous system, because that's another spiral we can get into. Symptoms come, we panic about the symptoms, we feel worse, we panic even more, the stress sets in, I'm never going to get better. Just a lot of the things around my mindset about gradually exposing myself to more and more activity and trusting that it's safe and trusting that my body can do it and that I'm going to be okay. And also, you know, the things that I did to work on my stress, to work on my mental health, I really embraced that small T trauma aspect. And I just started writing out a list of all of the things I could think of that I was still carrying going back to childhood. And none of them were massive, but they were things that were still there that I hadn't dealt with, I hadn't resolved. And just one by one, slowly, because I don't think addressing all of them at the same time is a good idea, but I just started journaling through them and just, you know, why am I hanging on to this? What about it is staying with me? What do I wish, you know, could have happened? How can I go back and protect that young girl? What would I have done differently? What boundaries would I have moving forward? And so just all of those things, I did so many things that addressed our threat assessment systems, you know, the brain, the amygdala, the autonomic nervous system, but I just had no idea that's what I was doing. So had I understood that, I think I could have recovered significantly faster in the end. Because in the end, it was close to 2 years before I was fully like no symptom flares, nothing. And I'm sure I could have sped that up if I really understood what was going on. Because if I could go back, I would have incorporated more conscious exercises and activities around that and more of a focus just to help with that aspect of things.
And I'm just kind of thinking of more questions as you're speaking, and I hope it's okay to ask, is do you feel like there's anything that you still do now to manage your health? Or do you feel like there's obviously, as human beings, that healthy humans need to manage their health lifelong as well, but manage maybe, shall I say, symptoms specifically relating to symptoms that you had when you were unwell. Do you feel like there's anything that you still kind of do, or are you more like a normal human who's just trying to be healthy?
That's a really good question. It's been an interesting journey over these last 5 or so years since I got past this, because I would say for probably 2-3 years, it was hard not to get scared when I would feel unwell. Even if it was just I went for a run or a really long hike and then I'd be tired, or like I am juggling too many things, and sometimes I'd have a really crazy week of 12-hour days, sometimes 14-hour days. And by Friday night, I would just hit a wall and I'd think, oh no, it's back. It took a long time of just coming to. So I guess the short answer is yes, there are still things that I do, because I recognize now that my nervous system was responsible for a lot of this, and it's never going to stop working. I don't ever want it to stop working. It's always going to be making threat assessments, and every once in a while, there might be one that's a little off. So I just ask myself in those moments, is this symptom a reasonable response to whatever has just happened? So if I've had a crazy busy week and I'm burnt out by Friday night, yeah, that makes sense.
That's pretty reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah. If I emptied the dishwasher and now I have to take a nap, is that a reasonable response? No, it's not. So, I mean, virtually every time I ask myself the question, the answer is yes, this is a reasonable response. So I feel like my body is operating fine and I'm mostly living just as a healthy person trying to stay healthy. But I also recognize that I still have to keep doing all the things I did to get well, because that's the reason I am well. And all of these same systems in my body that were there before are still there now. So I still have to live with self-compassion, manage my stress, take rests when I need it. And I, you know, I talk a lot about being busy, but I still do. I prioritize. I think it might have been you talking on my channel about real rest, but I really hold on to that term, and I make sure I have moments throughout the day where I just unplug from all devices, maybe lay down, close my eyes, just something where my body really gets to recharge. So it's a mixture of both. It's still doing all of those things that I did to get well, but more from a place of just trying to live a healthy, quote unquote, kind of normal life.
Yeah, and that makes absolute sense, because we also are existing in a world where the cultural norm is to push yourself really hard, overwork, undersleep, eat fast foods. You know, that's kind of what most people would consider, unfortunately, to be normal. So anything that is kind of actually just a a healthy level of self-care can sometimes seem, you know, like it's going over the top or trying too hard or doing too much. But really, this is what I say to all my clients, like all humans need to pace themselves. All humans yes. need to eat well and sleep well and look after their bodies and not, you know, stress too much or over-exercise too much. So yeah, it seems like you've got a really good balance. And I think that's, for me, is also some of the lessons that I'm really grateful for. It's before I was unwell, my life was just too fast, too much going on all the time. And now I'm so mindful of that, having a steadier pace of life, which I feel is really important just so that we can enjoy ourselves more and we're not constantly like frantic and overworked.
Yeah. And I think through all that, remembering that you're never going to get it perfectly. I think at the end of my book, I finished with some beautiful sort of sentiment of how I've learned my lesson and I will never be that way again. And mostly you do, I do take care of myself, but sometimes I sort of relapse a bit and I push too hard and my self-care goes out the window 1 week and maybe I'm eating pizza and maybe had chocolate chip cookies for lunch. And that's not the norm and I don't get stuck there anymore. But for a while, I'd really beat myself up. Like, how have you not learned your lesson? You, after everything you've been through, like, you know what? I'm not always going to get it all perfectly. I just aim for the best and forgive the rest.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a really important point there to make is because a lot of people say, oh, I'll never go back to how I was before. And I think maybe I thought that as well. But I, like you, have a very strong inner achiever, very strong internal drive, you know, like I want to build my business and do all these things and go hiking and, you know, like live a full life. And now, especially like work is getting busier and busier. And I'm noticing like some of those old patterns coming back. And you think that they're never going to come back, but they do come back. But there's two things I think is I've got so much more capacity in my nervous system to hold the intensity of it all. But also I have the ability to recognize the warning signs so much earlier and respond so much better. And also just like my inner achiever is still, she's highly efficient. She's great. She's fantastic at it. But also the other parts which I've strengthened across the journey that are able to kind of take some of the responsibility as well. And so she doesn't have to do everything all the time.
Yes, very well said. I echo every word of that.
And so just wrapping up, are there any sort of final messages that you would love to share for the community and maybe just talk a little bit about, you know, how people can find you, although we will put links with the show notes as well.
In my experience and the many people that I talk to, if you're going through something like this right now, you're facing one of these chronic health conditions, which can be so incredibly challenging. I think it just comes down to patience, self-compassion, and hope. I know we see stories of people who recover very quickly, but I, in my experience, that's really not the norm. Being kind to yourself, not just because it's the right thing to do and it feels good, but oh my goodness, it's such a dominant theme that it's something that helps people to get past this more quickly. And then the last one, hope, and I think it's the most important one, and that's just about not giving up. And, you know, for a time I kind of did, it can feel like this is just it. I just have to accept that this is it. And it's good to accept that this is where you are, but I personally don't ever want to accept that this is how it's going to be for the rest of my life. So whatever you can do to have that hope, whether it's, you know, listening to Anna's amazing podcast, listening to recovery interviews, borrow hope from other people when you need it, but just to not give up. And it's okay. You don't have to be hopeful and believing in this every minute of every day or every week of the year, but just try not to get stuck there when you get in those down places, you know. Be there, feel it, process your emotions, and then move on and just keep looking and do whatever you have to do to find what you need for that resilience to keep picking yourself back up and be like, okay, I'm going to keep trying. My answers are out there. I'm going to find them. I've got this. I think it's just really important.
Yeah, those are such beautiful words. And on the note of recovery stories and resources and all of that, where can people find you?
The best place probably is just my website, RaylanAgle.com. So it's got information about my book, my YouTube channel. You can sign up for my newsletter about the courses that I have. I have one called Brain Training, Brain Retraining 101 for ME, CFS, and Long COVID Recovery. So just short, easily digestible videos to the point, helping you understand the process and giving you tools to use. I also have a course on pacing. I did one on meal planning that Anna, you are a part of, actually. She was a guest speaker. Really incredible. Yes,
we spoke about my favorite topic, which is blood sugar. And I must say, one of my clients took that course and she found it really helpful.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah. So yeah, website has it all. So probably the best place to go.
Okay. Raylan, thank you again so much for your time and energy, not just for today, but because I know how much work goes into all the resources you put out there. And it's just, you know, the majority of everything that you offer is just completely free and in service of people who desperately need it. So on behalf of myself and the rest of the community and the people who haven't even found you yet, just a really, really big thank you for everything you do. Your work in the world. And thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I'm honored to be here and right back at you. So much respect and so much gratitude for you and all that you do. So thank you, Anna.
Oh, thank you everyone for listening, and we will see you in the next episode.